and welcome to the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Friday, May 15th, 2020. I'm your reader, Leanne Bakerose. Shelter orders showing negative effects, Reynolds says, as more businesses reopen. As more businesses reopened across the state Friday, per her order, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds said recent increases in domestic violence and mental illness show the unintended consequences of asking Iowans to stay sheltered for extended periods, and why it is important to continue relaxing previously installed virus mitigation restrictions. Reynolds in March ordered the partial or complete closure of many businesses in order to slow the spread of the new coronavirus. She has relaxed some of those restrictions in recent weeks. With the latest order, which went into effect Friday, restaurants, malls, fitness centers, salons, campgrounds, and myriad other businesses are allowed to be open, with some still required to implement social distancing precautions. During her daily briefing on the state's response to the global pandemic, Reynolds said she made the decision because her administration sees positive trends in public health data it is tracking, like fewer hospitalizations and a lower rate of new positive cases. She also said some negative trends are just as informative, including increases in domestic violence and mental illness. Reynolds did not cite specific data during the briefing. Her spokesman said he would provide the data by Friday afternoon. The data had not yet been provided when this story was published. There is a cost, a social cost, to also locking down and not figuring out a way to responsibly and safely start to open up the economy, get Iowans back to work so that they can take care of themselves and their families, Reynolds said during the briefing at the State Emergency Operations Center at Camp Dodge in Johnston. The expanded reopening of Iowa's businesses comes at a time when virus-related deaths continue to climb. The state on Friday confirmed 18 additional deaths, which continued the recent trend of pushing the 7-day average for single-day deaths to a new high. Friday's 7-day average for single-day deaths was 13.3, the highest since the first virus-related death in Iowa in late March. On the other hand, hospitalizations, both total and new admission in the past 24 hours, continued to plateau or trend downward. The state Friday reported 387 virus-related hospitalizations. That 7-day average has plateaued over the past week. And the state reported 23 new admissions over the past 24 hours. That 7-day average has been falling slowly but steadily for 10 days. Reynolds said the state healthcare system's capacity to handle patients is one of the reasons she felt comfortable allowing more businesses to reopen. In addition to the positive data she cited, she said requests from hospitals for personal protective equipment for healthcare workers have been fulfilled and the state still has a stockpile. We never guaranteed that no one would get COVID-19. That was never the goal from the beginning, Reynolds said. The goal was to make sure that we protected the health of Iowans, that we managed our healthcare resources to work to flatten the curve and not overwhelm our healthcare system and hospitals. So that's what we'll continue to watch, to make sure that they have the capacity to not only treat individuals that have tested positive for COVID that might need hospitalization, but that they can also take care of other Iowans that would meet that need as well. And we have done that. A team of experts at the University of Iowa, in an analysis sent to Reynolds on May 4th, cautioned that while the rate of the virus's spread through Iowa has been slowing, relaxing mitigation strategies likely would cause a reversal of that trend as more Iowans come in contact with one another. Reynolds said she remains in a modified quarantine. Reynolds visited the White House on May 6th and 2 days later participated in events with Vice President Mike Pence during his trip to Des Moines. Around that same time, members of Pence's and President Donald Trump's staff tested positive for the coronavirus. Reynolds said she did not come in direct contact with either of the staff members who tested positive, but went into her modified quarantine out of an abundance of caution. She is tested daily, has her temperature taken multiple times per day, wears a mask when interacting with her staff, and is limiting those interactions as much as possible. Reynolds said she plans to remain in quarantine for the recommended 14 days, which would take her through Wednesday. Sarah Gordo's daily COVID-19 update. Friday, May 15th. Data snapshot. 14,049 total lab-confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Iowa. 15 total lab-confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Sarah Gordo. The age ranges of the lab-confirmed Sarah Gordo cases are 18 to 40, 3 cases, 41 to 60, 6 cases, 61 to 80, 6 cases. 336 deaths in Iowa, 0 deaths in Cerro Gordo. 2,398 COVID-19 tests administered at the mobile testing unit. A status report of monitoring and testing of COVID-19 in Iowa, provided by the Iowa Department of Public Health, can be found at coronavirus.iowa.gov. For Cerro Gordo County data, visit cghealth.com. Advice to minimize risk while shopping for groceries. As more communities in Iowa begin to take steps to slow the spread of COVID-19 by limiting close contact, people are facing new challenges and questions about how to meet basic household needs, such as buying groceries. It's important to review and continue to adhere the following advice about how to meet these household needs in a safe and healthy manner. Stay home if sick. Avoid shopping if you feel ill or have symptoms of COVID-19. Order online or use curbside pickup. You can order food and other items online for home delivery or curbside pickup where possible. Only visit the grocery store or other stores selling household essentials in person when you absolutely need to. This will limit your potential exposure to others and the virus that causes COVID-19. Protect yourself while shopping. Wear a cloth face mask or covering that covers your mouth and nose. Stay at least 6 feet away from others while shopping and in lines. When you do have to visit in person, go during hours when fewer people will be there, for example, early morning or late night. If you are at higher risk for severe illness, find out if the store has special hours for people at higher risk. If they do, try to shop during those hours. People at higher risk for severe illness include adults 65 or older and people of any age who have serious underlying medical conditions. Avoid touching your face. If possible, use touchless payment, paying without touching money, a card, or a keypad. If you must handle money, a card, or use a keypad, use hand sanitizer right after paying. Disinfect the shopping cart and use disinfecting wipes if available. Use hand sanitizer when entering and leaving the store, especially before putting on and removing your mask. Keep a bottle in your car. At home, when you get home, wash your hands with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Wash them again after putting groceries away. For more advice on how to protect yourself when completing essential errands, visit cdc.gov/coronavirus. McNider Campground set to open today with modified rules. Margaret McNider Campgrounds will be opened at noon today, May 15th, with modified rules to mitigate the risk of spreading COVID-19, but also provide a recreational opportunity for camping patrons. Below is the list of modified rules that must be followed. Campers must call ahead and reserve a spot before camping. Only self-contained units will be allowed. No tenting is allowed at this time. Campers only in the campgrounds. No guests allowed. Campfires at campsites should be for occupants of the campsite only. 2 occupants per campsite unless immediate family contains more than 2. Restrooms, showers, general store, and laundry facilities will remain closed during this time. Dump station is for paying customers only. A strict 2-week rotation rule will be enforced in full hookup sites. Communal picnic tables and grills are open for use at your own risk. Playgrounds and shelter houses will remain closed. Camp host and city staff will be monitoring areas and will be removing any campers or groups larger than 10. Physical distancing needs to be followed so that the campgrounds remain open as a viable option for recreation. If patrons fail to adhere the rules stated above, the campground managers and city staff can choose to act, which includes anything from a warning to banning the party from the campgrounds. For more information, visit masoncity.net. Virus review. Most states fall short of recommended testing levels. As businesses reopened Friday in more of the U.S., an overwhelming majority of states still fall short of the COVID-19 testing level that public health experts say are necessary to safely ease lockdowns and avoid another deadly wave of outbreaks, according to an Associated Press analysis. Rapid, widespread testing is considered essential to tracking and containing the coronavirus. But 41 of the nation's 50 states fail to test widely enough to drive their infections below a key benchmark, according to an AP analysis of metrics developed by Harvard's Global Health Institute. Among the states falling short are Texas and Georgia, which moved aggressively last month to reopen stores, malls, barbershops, and other businesses. As health authorities expand testing to more people, the number of positive results should shrink compared with the total number of people tested. The World Health Organization and other health researchers have said a percentage above 10% indicates inadequate testing. South Korea, a country praised for its rapid response, quickly pushed its positive cases to below 3%. In other developments, Democrats began pushing Congress's biggest coronavirus relief bill yet toward expected House passage Friday, a $3 trillion behemoth they say a beleaguered country badly needs, but Republicans call a bloated election year wish list. The bill was sure to go nowhere in the GOP-led Senate, let alone reach President Donald Trump's desk, where a promised veto awaited. President Donald Trump expressed no concerns Friday about a rapid coronavirus test the White House has been relying on to ensure his safety, despite new data suggesting the test may return an inordinate share of false negatives. A preliminary study by New York University researchers reported problems with the test Trump and his deputies have been promoting as a game changer. American industry suffered the most severe plunge on record last month, with factories, mines, and utilities battered by the coronavirus pandemic. The Federal Reserve said Friday its industrial production index tumbled a record 11.2% in April. French nurses and doctors faced off with President Emmanuel Macron at a leading Paris hospital. They are demanding better pay and rethinking of a once-renowned public health system that was quickly overwhelmed by tens of thousands of virus patients. A nurse confronted Macron at the Pitié-Salpêtrière hospital, saying she's using a long-expired surgical mask and would like a pay raise, not a bonus. Medics peppered him with grievances. Shuttered sectors of New York's upstate economy will begin inching back to life Friday with more construction, manufacturing, and curbside retail pickups allowed in parts of the state miles away from pandemic-stricken New York City. The smaller cities and rural regions of upstate New York have been spared the brunt of the coronavirus outbreak. Governor Andrew Cuomo is allowing those areas to gradually reopen first, industry by industry. Along the California coast and in states known for silky sands and ample sun, the surf is up, along with a new set of rules to prevent the spread of coronavirus. Los Angeles County beaches reopened this week, requiring masks on the beach and rules that people be exercising or moving. An American cargo pilot who acknowledged poor judgment in breaking a quarantine order to buy medical supplies became the first foreigner imprisoned in Singapore for breaching its restrictions meant to curb the coronavirus. FedEx pilot Brian Dugan Yergin of Alaska was sentenced to 4 weeks Wednesday after he pleaded guilty to leaving his hotel room for 3 hours to buy masks and a thermometer, says defense lawyer Ronnie Tan. Second Mason City Quickstar opening in August, third in the works. How things change. Even as late as November 2019, Mason City could not lay claim to a Quickstar location of its own. Cerro Gordo County had one location, in Clear Lake, and that was it. No others to be found. Less than a year later, there's a second Quickstar coming to both Mason City and Clear Lake before the summer's even up. According to Quickstar spokesperson Steve Roble, the new Clear Lake Quickstar is slated to open at 5 a.m. on Thursday, July 9th, while a second Mason City location on South Pierce Avenue will be operational on Thursday, August 6th. Once those are up and running, there's likely to be a third Quickstar in Mason City that could make progress before the year is up. Roble said there's a building report and preliminary estimate for a long-planned store near Eisenhower Avenue, where Iowa State Patrol used to be, but there's no permanent date yet. That fits with the way the company does business. Roble made clear that the Wisconsin-based chain's real estate department is always open to new sites when they present themselves, and Colton Weigemann, a project manager with Dean Snyder Construction, has previously said that Quickstar has a bunch of stores it wants completed this year, so a fourth location isn't entirely out of the question either. Just in the past few years, Quickstar's added to its total of 600-plus Midwest stores with announcements and openings for locations in Charles City, Clear Lake, Forest City, Garner, and Mason City. One of the earliest for the North Iowa area was the 7,500-square-foot convenience store and truck center in Clear Lake that Quickstar opened in 2015 on a 19-acre parcel at the intersection of Highway 122 and North 32nd Street, east of Interstate 35. The initial Mason City store opened at the former Woos's Car Wash, a longtime car wash and full-service gas station on South Federal Avenue. Mason City Friday Night Live series going virtual this summer. When a pandemic prevents partying, take the partying online. That's what Main Street Mason City has opted to do with its annual summer series, Friday Night Live. In a normal non-plague year, the series would be kickstarting in early June, but because of the still very real COVID-19 concerns, there will now be a virtual, socially mediated event instead. While we are disappointed we will not be able to physically be with our community members for the June Friday Night Live event, we still want to provide an opportunity to connect, Main Street Mason City Executive Director Emily Ginberg shared in a press release on Thursday afternoon. According to Ginberg, the group's board had extended conversations about what the best decision would be and settled on virtual fare for at least the June event. The safety of our vendors, community members, local businesses, and those who attend the event is our main focus, she said. The local event's just the latest summer fixture to be impacted this week by COVID-19 concerns. The McNider Arts Festival had to be pushed back to late August. The Mason City Municipal Band summer season was canceled entirely. And the Mason City Aquatic Center is staying closed for now. Even public holiday celebrations for the area are in a wait-and-see mode for the time being. Clear Lake, Mason City farmers markets return for 2020 season. Tis the season. Farmers market season, that is. The farmers markets in Clear Lake and Mason City will open with modifications within the next week after Governor Kim Reynolds gave them and others across the state the green light in late April to operate in a limited capacity this year amid the COVID-19 pandemic. It's more important this year than ever for our customers to support local producers in this time of unusual circumstances, said Lisa Packer with Healthy Harvest of North Iowa. The Clear Lake Farmers Market will open Saturday in the Surf Ballroom and Museum parking lot, 460 North Shore Drive. It will take place from 9 a.m. to noon, Saturdays from May 16th through October 17th. The North Iowa Farmers Market will return Tuesday at the corner of First Street Northeast and Delaware Avenue in downtown Mason City. It will occur from 4 to 6 p.m. Tuesdays and Fridays from May 19th through October 16th. Under the Governor's State Public Health Emergency Proclamation, farmers markets can only offer vendors who sell food and farm products. The sale of other goods, as well as musical performances, children's activities, and other forms of entertainment are prohibited. Packer said at both markets there will be signs encouraging social distancing guidelines among customers and vendors. Power of Produce, or POP for kids, will return to the North Iowa Farmers Market as a grab-and-go program, which encourages children to learn about fruits and vegetables by offering a two-bite challenge and a $2 voucher. Other activities and entertainment will be available virtually via the respective farmers market's social media pages, Packer said. We are adapting as best as we can and playing it by ear like everyone else, she said. At the markets, there will be vendors who can provide local, homegrown produce, artisan breads and baked goods, meats and eggs, honey, maple syrup, jams and jellies, cheese, fresh flower bouquets, bedding plants, and seedlings. Healthy Harvest of North Iowa Executive Director Marie Boyd said there are at least 10 vendors already signed up to start the farmers market season, but she reminded consumers that their crop doesn't peak until mid to late summer. A new option for both markets this year will be the curbside market, a pilot program that allows customers to order local farmers market products online and pick them up at the curb. Boyd said the curbside market was a project that was in the works before COVID-19 as an extension of the in-person farmers market for individuals who are looking for a fast and convenient way to connect to products and goods produced locally. We are already trying to bring farmers markets into that online space, but obviously now this adds another layer and option for folks not interested in being out in public, even in limited social distance crowds, she said. So how does it work? Customers shop the online selection of farmers market vendors and products at curbsidemarketni.com 1 to 3 days before the market, and then on market day, their orders are available for curbside pickup. The Curbside Market is a partnership between Healthy Harvest of North Iowa, North Iowa Fresh LLC, the University of North Iowa's local food program, and participating farmers markets. It will also be available in Cedar Falls and Waterloo starting in June. The curbside market, unlike the physical markets, will offer artisan and craft vendor products, Boyd said. For more information about the local farmers markets, visit the Healthy Harvest of North Iowa, Clear Lake Farmers Market, and North Iowa Farmers Market Facebook and Instagram pages. Pets put on their Sunday best for senior living residents. Goats, cats, and all sizes of dogs strutted their stuff for the residents of Good Shepherd Health Center and Cornerstone Assisted Living on Friday. Dozens of animals, many dressed in costumes, and their handlers made their way around the facilities, waving at residents through the windows as part of a pet parade, which wrapped up a stretch of activities commemorating National Skilled Nursing Care and Staff Appreciation Week at Good Shepherd. A parade of people and cars was also held Thursday, giving residents a chance to wave and greet participants from the safety of the sidewalk. Activities Director Jessica Hansen said the staff has been working really hard and thinking outside the box when it comes to keeping the residents busy and content during the COVID-19 shutdown. It has not been an easy task by any means, just trying to keep the folks happy and keep the smiles on their faces, Hansen said. So I think this definitely helped. I hope it did anyway. Hansen said the community has been very supportive of the residents and staff, with businesses and community members dropping off various donations, such as masks, activities, and snacks. I think everyone realized that we're all in this together, said Hansen. I mean, just everybody. I don't even know how to thank you. Iowa researchers project hundreds more COVID-19 deaths. University of Iowa researchers warned that the coronavirus would continue spreading through the state even before Governor Kim Reynolds reopened restaurants and churches. A move, they said, would exacerbate the problem, documents released Friday show. The researchers, including some of the state's top epidemiologists and infectious disease experts, also warned that hundreds more residents will likely die through the end of May, even if widespread business closures remained in effect. Evidence shows that COVID-19 will continue to spread in Iowa, likely at an increasing rate, the team led by Dr. Joseph Kavanaugh, head of the university's biostatistics department, concluded in a May 4th paper. Reynolds has downplayed the importance of such models and continued her push to reopen the economy, despite surging numbers of deaths this week. Restaurants, gyms, barbershops, and salons reopened Friday in 22 counties, including the state's largest metropolitan areas, where they had been closed for 2 months. On Friday, the governor said she appreciated the university's work, but that she was relying on real-time data from hospitals and testing to manage the state's pandemic response. She said she was encouraged by increased testing, declining numbers of positive tests statewide, and the amount of hospital resources available. She also warned that not reopening the state would have a social cost, including high unemployment, rising domestic abuse, and food insecurity. The Iowa Department of Public Health had asked experts at the UI College of Public Health for technical assistance forecasting the pandemic severity in Iowa. A contract signed last month said the modeling would be for the state's internal use and barred the school from releasing any findings for a year. The department released the university's latest two reports Friday in response to media inquiries. In a report to the Iowa Department of Public Health on April 27th, the research team said that Iowa had not reached a peak and reopening the state economy before then would result in a rapid rise of cases. Nonetheless, the governor announced that day that restaurants, malls, and stores could reopen in 77 counties and in-person church services could resume statewide effective May 1st. In a paper dated May 4th, the researchers found that the virus was still likely spreading in Iowa communities. They said that school and business closures and ban on gatherings of more than 10 people had strongly mitigated the amount of infection, but nonetheless were not sufficient to prevent uncontained spread by themselves. The state of Iowa is sufficiently interconnected that we expect continued growth of COVID-19, even in the absence of any measures to relax social distancing or to reopen previously closed businesses and religious institutions, they wrote. Importantly, even though much of the recent spread in Iowa has been attributed to clusters, such as workplaces and long-term care facilities, continued increase in community spread is expected. They said the governor's decision to reopen restaurants, churches, and other businesses would increase social contacts and therefore the rate of transmission. But they also said the impact of the partial reopening likely would not be known for several weeks. The researchers said the state's observed deaths, which jumped by 18 to 336 on Friday, closely tracked their projections from an earlier paper. That research forecast a median outcome of 747 deaths by May 28. Reynolds has called the deaths, including 65 over the past 4 days, a lagging indicator of the pandemic severity because they happen after several days of illness. Regents cut funding to Iowa Public Radio. Iowa Public Radio said Friday that the State Board of Regents has pulled its funding amid decreased revenues as a result of the coronavirus pandemic. The Des Moines Register reported the statewide radio network will lose $875,000 because of the region's decision. That represents about 10% of the revenue it expected to receive for the fiscal year that begins July 1st, said IPR Executive Director Myrna Johnson. Spokespeople for the Regents did not return calls or emails from the newspaper. University funding has been critical support that has helped IPR serve citizens in every corner of our state, and its loss will present a financial challenge for us as we plan for the upcoming fiscal year, Johnson told the newspaper in an email. Johnson said they are exploring fundraising options to offset the cut. IPR operates 26 stations across Iowa, reaching 250,000 listeners, according to its website. No reports of rare condition affecting Iowa children. Iowa parents breathed a sigh of relief Friday when state officials said they have not received any reports of a rare but potentially deadly condition linked to COVID-19 in children being present in Iowa. Cases of the pediatric multisystem inflammatory syndrome have been reported in at least 19 states, including Illinois and Missouri and Washington, D.C. At least 3 children, 18 and younger, have died from MISC, which causes prolonged fever, skin rash, stomach pain, and swollen lymph nodes in the neck, similar to what doctors identify as Kawasaki disease and toxic shock syndrome. The illness prompted the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to issue a health alert to physicians this week after doctors expressed concerns the mysterious condition may be linked to the novel coronavirus, which initially appeared to be more of a threat to older people or those with underlying serious medical conditions. We are not aware at this particular point in time of any cases of the inflammatory condition in children, Sarah Reissetter, Deputy Director of the Iowa Department of Public Health, said Friday during Governor Kim Reynolds' daily COVID-19 news briefing at the state's Emergency Operations Center. We are paying close attention to the information that is coming out of the state of New York as well as from the CDC, Reissetter said. She noted that Dr. Caitlin Padotti, state medical director and epidemiologist, routinely confers with CDC officials and other state epidemiologists. We're keeping a close eye on the situation, and certainly if we learn more, we'll be sure to share that, Reissetter said. According to the latest COVID-19 health agency data, about 2% of the 14,049 positive coronavirus cases in Iowa involve children in the birth to 17-year age group, with the same percentage among the 6,561 who have recovered from the virus. You are listening to the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Friday, May 15th, 2020, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Leslie G. Eucken, born August 16th, 1959, died May 15th, 2020. A funeral service for Leslie G. Eucken, 60, of Clear Lake, formerly of Tatonka, will be held Friday, May 15th, at Oakcrest Funeral Services of Tatonka, and will be private for the immediate family. Burial will take place in Buffalo Township Cemetery in Tatonka. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to One Vision, P.O. Box 622, Clear Lake, Iowa, in Leslie's memory. Leslie George Eucken was born August 16, 1959, in Britt, son of Edward R. and Marlene E. DeBoer Eucken. He grew up on the family farm northwest of Tatanka and graduated from Lakota High School in 1979. Leslie moved to Clear Lake in 1980, living in Opportunity Village's group home, and later proudly he lived on his own in an apartment. Leslie married his school sweetheart, Lori Work, on August 21, 1999, at the Tatanka United Methodist Church. He held various jobs while living in Clear Lake, thoroughly enjoying mowing yards and working at the Best Western Hotel and Bennigan's Restaurant. Leslie loved to visit with people. He was fond of John Deere tractors, and he enjoyed watching TV, especially old shows and WWE wrestling. Leslie G. Eucken died Monday, May 11th, at the age of 60. He is survived by a brother, Gary Eucken, and his wife, Linda, of Tatanka, two nieces, Andrea Schmidt and her husband, Josh, of Lake Crystal, Minnesota, and their children, Brendan and Lauren, and Allison Buns and her husband, Casey, of North Mankato, Minnesota, two aunts, Judy Junkermeyer and her husband, Lamont, of Tatanka, and Sharon Eucken of Tatanka, and many cousins, other relatives, and friends. He was preceded in death by his parents and his wife, Lori, on February 3, 2010. Oak Crest Funeral Services of Tatanka is in charge of arrangements. Online condolences may be made at oakcrestfuneralservices.com. Alvina Molitor. Alvina Molitor, 91, of Floyd, passed away Tuesday, May 12th, at the 11th Street Chautauqua Guest Home in Charles City, with her family by her side. Due to state and federal guidance on gatherings due to the COVID-19 pandemic, a private family funeral service will be held at Hauser Weishauer Funeral Home in Charles City, with Sister Diana Blong from Immaculate Conception Catholic Church officiating. The service will be live-streamed on the Hauser Weishauer Funeral Home Facebook page at 11 a.m. Saturday, May 16th. Burial will be at Calvary Cemetery in Charles City. Online condolences may be left on the tribute wall for the family at hauserfh.com, and that's spelled hauserfh.com. Mary Montag. Mary Montag, 98, of West Bend, formerly of Forest City, died Tuesday at West Bend Health and Rehab. A graveside service will be held 11 a.m. Saturday at the West Bend Cemetery in West Bend. Harris Funeral Home in West Bend is handling the arrangements. June M. Fredrickson. June M. Fredrickson, 96, of Mason City, died Thursday, May 14th, at her home. Services are pending and will be announced at a later date. Arrangements are with Major Erickson Funeral Home and Crematory, majorericksonfuneralhome.com. And Erickson is spelled E-R-I-C-K-S-O-N. COVID-19 causes Iowa liquor sales to surge. Apparently, there's nothing like a stay-at-home global pandemic to drive Iowans to drink. Officials with the Iowa Alcoholic Beverages Division announced Friday that liquor sales in March, the month Iowa confirmed its first cases of the novel coronavirus, jumped 26% to $31.9 million. Iowans followed that up by buying $28.6 million worth of spirits in April for a 2% increase from a year ago. Much of the sharp increase in liquor sales in March is believed to be attributable to changes in consumer behavior due to COVID-19, according to an agency news release. That occurred as Iowa bars and restaurants were ordered closed to the public for sit-down service beginning on March 17th to help prevent the spread of the virus. As a result, Iowans appeared to shift to purchasing liquor by the bottle for at-home consumption, according to the news release. Iowa's Alcoholic Beverages Division sells liquor to off-premises retailers, such as liquor stores, grocery stores, and convenience stores, but it is unable to track individual purchases of liquor by consumers. State officials did note, however, that sales data for March 16th through April 1st indicated an 82% increase in the number of cases of 1.75-liter-sized liquor products the division sells to off-premises retailers compared to the same time frame in 2019. Case sales of standard-size 750-milliliter bottles increased by 51%, a surge that caused agency officials to conclude the sales spike is believed to be due to increased by-the-bottle purchases by consumers. We can't be certain that these sales figures demonstrate an increase in personal consumption. Iowans may have simply changed where they are continuing to enjoy their favorite spirits products, said Division Administrator Stephen Larson. Regardless, we encourage all Iowans who choose to consume alcohol to always do so in a moderate and responsible manner. Despite being ordered closed to the public for sit-down service, bars and restaurants have been granted temporary alcohol sales privileges to help generate much-needed revenue. Governor Kim Reynolds also issued a proclamation allowing bars and restaurants to sell unopened bottles of liquor to go. On the week that Reynolds took that action in March, the division's case sales of 50-milliliter bottles of liquor increased 60% over sales the same week in 2019. The governor signed another proclamation March 31st, allowing bars and restaurants to sell mixed drinks and cocktails made on-site to go. In the week that followed, the division's case sales of 750-milliliter bottles of liquor increased by almost 20%. The governor's fast action in this area was critical in helping to prop up Iowa's bars and restaurants at a time when they were asked to sacrifice greatly to protect public health, said Larson. At the same time, Iowa's largest independently owned liquor stores that supply bars and restaurants reduced their purchases from the state's Alcoholic Beverages Agency by 44% since March 17. Last month, Reynolds issued a proclamation reopening restaurants in 77 of Iowa's 99 counties for limited sit-down service effective May 1st, and she expanded that statewide effective Friday, action that division officials said could boost demand for liquor purchases by restaurants. One other negative impact of the COVID-19 outbreak in Iowa was a sharp drop in applications for short-term temporary state licenses sought for special events like fairs, festivals, and concerts during spring and summer, many of which have been canceled due to concerns associated with large crowds and social distancing. State licensing data showed a sharp decline in the number of 5 and 14-day alcohol licenses issued in March and April, as well as applications submitted for licenses for May, June, and July, according to the division. Meanwhile, renewals and applications for Class E liquor licenses from liquor stores, grocery stores, and most convenience stores that allow sale of liquor for off-premise consumption held relatively steady in March and April to comparable 2019 data, officials said. The same was true for Class C liquor licenses held by bars and restaurants allowing the sale of liquor, beer, and wine for on-premises consumption. Iowa lawmakers figure out rules for returning to work June 3rd. Iowa legislative leaders approved a plan for lawmakers to resume their in-person work at the Capitol on June 3rd with the expectation of finishing a budget and other essential work the following week. Lawmakers, who suspended their session March 16th as part of the effort to slow the spread of the coronavirus, will operate under new health and safety guidelines approved by the Legislative Council in a telephonic meeting Thursday afternoon. "We're trying to take every precaution to make members feel comfortable coming back," House Speaker Pat Grassley, Republican New Hartford, said. However, concerns were voiced that the guidelines didn't go far enough to protect lawmakers who are elderly, have pre-existing conditions, or underlying health concerns. Before entering the Capitol, legislative staff and members of the public, but not lawmakers, will be required to go through a health screening consisting of having their temperatures taken and answering a few questions. Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitfer, Republican from Ankeny, explained lawmakers cannot be denied access to the Capitol when the legislature is in session. "I appreciate whatever constitutional rights people think they have not to have their temperature taken," Senator Joe Bolcom, Democrat from Iowa City, said, but hoped all lawmakers would wear personal protective equipment and undergo the screening as the neighborly thing to do. "There are no plans for remote voting for members who might not feel comfortable being part of a mass gathering in Des Moines, which is one of the nation's COVID-19 hotspots. Once inside the Capitol, personal protective equipment will be encouraged but not mandatory." Procedurally, Republicans, who control both chambers, said they will set June 5th as the second funnel deadline, which requires bills to have been approved by one chamber and a committee of the other to advance to final approval. Whitfer and Grassley said they will provide guidance on what legislation they intend to take up, but did not take a suggestion from Democrats to decide before June 3rd which bills the majority party has agreed to pass. "There may be a new bill or two out there, but bills that were alive when we left are still alive," Whitfer said. "My hope is that when we come back June 3rd, the budget is agreed to and ready to go." Before lawmakers return, Governor Kim Reynolds and the legislative leaders want the Revenue Estimating Conference to meet and evaluate the state's financial position before lawmakers create a fiscal year 2021 budget. The leaders pointed to the healthy surplus in reserve accounts under their conservative budgeting practices. However, much has changed in the 2 months since the REC last met, Grassley said. When the REC met in March, the three-member panel predicted state tax collections would grow by $76.1 million above the current expectation to nearly $8.091 billion for the current year. The panel lowered the fiscal 2021 outlook to 1.8% growth, nearly $8.237 billion, which was $12.3 million less than its December 2019 estimate. The Legislative Services Agency reported Thursday the year-over-year decline in state tax revenue from March 19th to May 13th was $531 million, or 34%. Total tax receipts Thursday were 2.37% below May 14, 2019, with personal and corporate income taxes off nearly 7%. Sales taxes were running 5.2% ahead of this point in 2019. Much of the decrease is due to Iowa extending the deadline for paying income taxes from April 30th to July 31st, the Legislative Services Agency said. The numbers are really bad, but it doesn't seem to be permanent yet, said Jeff Robinson, a senior tax analyst for the agency. In addition to health screenings for the public before entering the Capitol, the Legislative Council said social distancing guidelines should be practiced. If that's not possible, people are encouraged, not mandated, to wear a face mask or shield, which will be made available at the Capitol. Hand sanitizer stations will be positioned throughout the Capitol. Committee meetings will take place in either the Senate or House chamber and be live-streamed on the legislative website, legis.iowa.gov, and may be viewed on television monitors throughout the Capitol. House Senate budget subcommittee meetings will be discontinued. Budget bills will go through each chamber's appropriations committee. Members of the public are strongly encouraged to submit written comments on legislation via the legislature website. And again, that's legis.iowa.gov. Iowa Human Rights Group, latest to endure racist cyber attack. A Des Moines commission dedicated to protecting human rights is among the latest to endure racist and sexist messages from cyber attackers. The Des Moines Civil and Human Rights Commission was forced to cancel a video conference meeting Thursday night with the Des Moines City Council when the meeting was disrupted by racist, sexist, and pornographic messages, officials said. Commission Chairman Cameron Middlebrooks said the messages were directed at members of the commission. What occurred proves hate and ignorance is alive and well, Middlebrooks said in a written statement. But I stand steadfast in my resolve to continue to be an agent of change. Officials say the meeting will be rescheduled. Since the coronavirus pandemic this year forced many groups to meet via teleconferencing, there have been reports around the globe of teleconferences and online classrooms being disrupted by hackers displaying hate messages or shouting profanities. A letter to the editor. Formerly local TV station has abandoned Mason City. Does anyone else think that KIMT-TV airing Governor Walz at 2 p.m. every day, triplicating the identical KALAL-TV and KTTC-TV broadcasts instead of Governor Reynolds, is wrong? Am I the only person who feels like KIMT has turned their back on the community that has supported them for decades? I can't help but feel greed is the impetus behind KIMT's decision to abandon Mason City. It is clearly not the welfare of our community that guides them in decision-making. If they cared about our community, they would not have left us for an already oversaturated market that is definitely not lacking in local stations to serve the needs of that community. Seems like they had a duty to keep us safe in the moment that no one else is equipped to do. Only TV can reach so many so quickly in an emergency. Signed, Ed Gunderson, Mason City. The once disappearing phone call is making a comeback. When Lauren Pelliser picked up her phone the other day to call a lifelong friend on the other side of the country, her friend answered by asking what was wrong. That's how unusual it is for Pelliser 45, to call her friends on the phone. Between working as an event planner, running a nonprofit, raising a child, and volunteering at a school, the Decatur, Georgia resident rarely had a block of time to talk uninterrupted before the coronavirus pandemic. Now that her regular life has come to a halt, that's no longer the case. Picking up the phone and calling people reconnected me to everybody on a level that I had lost through texting, she said. As people navigate through the unprecedented global pandemic, the once disappearing phone call is seeing a resurgence. When the pandemic began, telecom companies noticed something peculiar, a strain on their networks due to phone calls. With COVID happening, suddenly all these phone calls started shooting through the roof that we weren't expecting. Chris Sambar, AT&T's Executive Vice President of Technology Operations, said, "Voice became the cool app in 2020. The telephone, at least as it relates to making actual calls, has been on its deathbed for a while. In 2004, more than 90% of U.S. households had a landline. By 2019, it had fallen to a little more than 40%, according to a 2018 survey by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Usage had declined so much that telecom companies cited it as the reason for taking out copper phone lines in recent years. Smartphones replaced landlines, and people used them less for phone calls and more for texting. U.S. smartphone users send and receive 5 times as many texts as they do phone calls, according to a 2015 report by the former mobile data firm Informate. And most age groups are spending less time talking on the phone," Nielsen reported in 2015. Then the pandemic hit. AT&T, which owns CNN, reported that from mid-March to May 1st, wireless voice calls peaked at 44% above typical levels, and Wi-Fi calling more than doubled. Other telecom services noticed the same thing. At the height of the pandemic in March, Verizon was reporting an average of 800 million wireless calls each weekday. That's nearly double the number of calls made on Mother's Day, typically the busiest call day of the year. This Mother's Day, calls were up almost 10% compared to the holiday last year. Both companies also reported that call duration is up, meaning that people are staying on the phone longer. Call duration went up significantly, and that continues to be up week over week, said Heidi Hemmer, Vice President of Network for Verizon. People are definitely reaching out. The uptick in phone calls is in line with a broader trend of more increased communication during the pandemic. Telecom companies are also reporting increases in text messaging, while video conferencing services like Zoom have also seen a surge in usage. Still, there's a sense of intimacy felt in phone calls that just can't be matched by texting, which makes it hard to convey tone or emotion, or video chats, which require more focus and create a hyper-awareness of one's own appearance, Pellissier, the event planner, said. A text is so benign, she said, but a Zoom call is so invasive. A phone call is a perfect middle ground. There are several reasons for the uptick in phone calls. For those who live in rural areas or older generations who aren't as technologically savvy, phone calls are the easiest and most reliable form of communication. That's why Cecilia Hollenhorst, a second-year medical student at the University of Michigan, decided to set up a weekly group phone call for the elderly patients she volunteers for. Hollenhorst, 26, had already been participating in an initiative to check up on a number of seniors through weekly phone calls, but she wanted to foster a greater sense of community for them. Though many people are socializing and hanging out virtually through Zoom, video calls weren't feasible for the patients she worked with. So every Thursday at 3 p.m., she and a group of older adults get together for an hour-long phone conversation. In the absence of family visits and other social contact, it's a way for those seniors to share struggles, trade advice, and chat about anything that's on their mind. Right now, since all of us have this shared experience of staying home, it's easy to find more things to talk about than normal with a stranger over the phone, she said. It's not just older generations that are talking on the phone more. Hollenhorst is somewhat of an anomaly for her age. The 26-year-old is a self-described phone person, calling her mom most days and talking to her siblings often as well. But she says she's seen a shift even among her friends who weren't so eager to pick up the phone before. Though previously, the time she spent on the phone was mostly with family, she's now having more phone calls with friends too. It does seem that other people are becoming phone people, Hollenhorst said. Ultimately, the rise of phone calls is an extension of people's desire for human connection at a time when they're feeling isolated, said Valley Wright, a psychologist and senior director of healthcare innovation for the American Psychological Association. We're just craving that sense of connection, so to me, the phone just seems the most obvious way to replace that, she said. The rise in phone calls also creates potential for people to emerge from the pandemic with a greater appreciation of their relationships, she added. It remains to be seen whether phone calls will remain as widespread after life regains some semblance of normalcy. Telecom companies are already reporting some declines in voice calls since the pandemic's peak. But as people use this time to reflect on what's important to them, it's likely that reaching out via phone calls could continue. Pellissier and her friend ended up chatting for an hour and a half. After the conversation ended, her friend texted her, saying how nice it was to hear her voice. Pellissier felt the same way and plans to make talking on the phone a priority even post-pandemic. Times like these, she said, have shown just how important those connections are. And that does it for today's reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Friday, May 15th, 2020. I'm your reader, Leanne Bakerose. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening.
In the People's Pharmacy Health Headlines. With half a dozen measles outbreaks currently underway in the U.S., as well as several serious international outbreaks, the news on measles vaccine from Denmark is important. Researchers conducted a nationwide study that included everyone born between 1999 and 2010. With more than 650,000 children in that group, they had more than 5 million person-years of follow-up. The Danish health system keeps excellent records on all of its citizens, including the children. Consequently, the scientists are confident that the 6,517 children diagnosed with autism during the study period are all the children who developed this condition. Children who did not receive the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, or MMR, were equally likely as vaccinated children to develop autism. The investigators conclude, the study strongly supports that MMR vaccination does not increase the risk for autism, does not trigger autism in susceptible children, and is not associated with clustering of autism cases after vaccination.
The Food and Drug Administration has just approved a completely new type of antidepressant. The nasal spray, called esketamine, is expected to help people who have not responded to standard antidepressants. It will be marketed under the brand name Spravato. This drug is chemically related to the injectable anesthetic ketamine that's been on the market since 1970 and is available generically. Although esketamine is administered as a nasal spray, people will not be permitted to purchase it for home use. They will need to use Spravato under medical supervision at a clinic or doctor's office. Some experts have challenged the FDA's approval process for esketamine. While two clinical trials demonstrated some benefit, two others did not show that esketamine is better than placebo. Side effects of this novel antidepressant include nausea, dizziness, headache, and a feeling of dissociation.
FDA Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb unexpectedly announced his departure from the agency this week. Experts were puzzled by his announcement since he has received high marks from the administration, industry, and even some consumer groups. Dr. Gottlieb has raised questions about teen vaping and has been an outspoken critic of pharmacy chains that sell tobacco products to minors. Some commentators speculate that these stances might be related to his abrupt departure. His explanation for the sudden departure is that he wants to spend more time with his wife and young children. Dr. Gottlieb is a survivor of Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Another week, another drug recall. Many lots of ARB blood pressure drugs, including losartan, valsartan, and irbesartan, have been recalled over the past 8 months. These medicines were contaminated with potential carcinogens known as NDMA and NDEA. Now, Hetero Labs has recalled 87 lots, and Tarrant Pharmaceuticals Limited is recalling 100 lots of losartan tablets. These pills contain an entirely new contaminant just identified as NMBA. It, too, is a suspected carcinogen. All three of these nitrosamine contaminants are apparently created as a result of the manufacturing process. FDA Commissioner Gottlieb stated, "We're making important strides at understanding how these impurities form, and we're continuing to examine if nitrosamine impurities may also arise during the manufacture of other ARB drug products. The FDA is committed to implementing measures to prevent the formation of these impurities during drug manufacturing processes in the future."
Cocoa flavonoids may have some benefit for people with multiple sclerosis, according to a small study. Previous research showed that dark chocolate rich in cocoa compounds might improve symptoms of chronic fatigue. The investigators recruited 40 people with relapsing remitting MS to drink cocoa every day for 6 weeks. 19 of them got high flavonoid cocoa, while 21 drank low flavonoid cocoa. At the end of the study, those on the high flavonoid cocoa had slightly less fatigue and could walk somewhat farther in 6 minutes than they had at the outset. They also reported less pain. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week.